Welcome to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman, and this episode will be looking back at the 1-0 Fulham victory at the championship playoff final at Wembley. And now the club has been promoted to the Premier League. I was there, and I look forward to sharing my thoughts on it, but I have several people on this episode to join me. First, Mr. Janaeus, how are you doing? How are you feeling today?
I still don't have a job, you know. I'm trying to find a job, and I don't know anywhere. Elated. I mean, what a performance! What a win! I don't think there's a fan out there that's not already is not still on cloud 74 right now. It's just absolutely. It's surreal, and it's nice to be able to start reading the papers and talk about online Premier League transfer gossip. That's when you know it's really going to hit.
Absolutely, good stuff there, my friend. I look forward to doing the show with you, Mr. Cohen. You made it to Wembley along with myself. Thank you to the Fulham supporter that helped you out. We could talk a little bit about that, John Quinn, for doing that for you. Talk about your time at Wembley, and I look forward to hearing about it.
Yeah, first and foremost, thank you to John Quinn, who amazingly, very kindly reached out to me and arranged to get me and my family tickets. It was a great gesture, and it made my dream come true, because it was just that. It was a dream to see my favorite club play at Wembley, to win at Wembley, to get into the Premier League. And Saturday just made all those dreams come true. It was, without a doubt, one of the best days of my life, and I can't wait to talk more about it with you guys.
I look forward to getting all of your thoughts on it. I'll be sharing mine in just a bit. But we have Mr. Dan Crawford on us from hamian.com. Dan, how are you doing? Are you still on cloud 9?
Oh, yeah, mate. It's going to take a while to come down from cloud 9. I don't know about the rest of you. All right, you know, that was incredible, wasn't it, Russ?
It was. It was. Dan, in the history of Fulham, where does this rank? Is this number one?
For me, it's number one. Yeah, obviously, I don't go back quite as far as some supporters, but yeah, it's right up there. I didn't think I'd ever see Fulham play at Wembley, so there was a part of me that was happy to be there. But of course, in a game of such magnitude, you want to win. And there were several points of which I was slightly nervous. That's an understatement. But we got there in the end.
Exactly. And Dan, I'm just going to now just go right back to you, because you said we got there in the end. And I've been seeing a lot of chatter from, say, Aston Villa supporters and supporters from other teams contacting me and talking about certain controversial moments. We'll go through that and talk about these moments. But I'm just going to say it this way. Dan, they deserved to win that and gain promotion. Would you agree with me on that? I think you're going to say yes.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, let's set aside all of that, all of the sort of talking points, if you like,
right,
from the match, Ross. After the first half, I was astounded at how easy it was. You know,
oh, they were dominant.
Fulham could have been 3-0 up at half time. And of course,
absolutely,
being Fulham, we weren't 3-0 up at half-time.
exactly.
We don't like to make it easy for ourselves. You know, we do have to sort of go through, you know, several heart attacks before the final whistle. We were fantastic in the first half. And you know what? We were fantastic in the second half in a totally different way.
Absolutely.
Max put it perfectly in the article that he wrote, where the first half showed there was a juxtaposition, I think you said, Max, between the first 45 minutes and the second 45 minutes of pure grit and desire and determination. And, you know, there was almost an element of the players knew what was at stake and they weren't going to give in. They weren't going to give anyone an opportunity. And, you know, Marcus Bettinelli kept a clean sheet at Wembley.
He did.
And five years ago, he was playing conference football or below the conference for Dartford, you know, and now he's in the Premier League. And that pretty much says everything about what a magical day that was.
Oh, it was completely magical. And Max, since Dan just brought up your article, tell us a little bit about it. And it's very interesting because I was listening to a Aston Villa podcast, and they were talking about the performance of one of the hosts. I was going back and forth with them, DMing. We disagreed on their evaluation. One of the co-hosts, actually, I should just say one of the co-hosts, I disagree with his evaluation of Fulham's performance here. because I thought, again, it was a performance of two different halves. I think Dan really explained it well. I thought the second half was more about playing a little bit like Brighton did all of last season, just being really tough to break down and just doing your job. That's the way I looked at it. The second half was doing your job, and first was really just being in complete control and dominant. Just share a little bit about your article. Is that what your article was about? I've not read it. I apologize for that.
Yeah, of course. I think Dan did a great job of summing it up, because it really is that juxtaposition between the first half of when we played our beautiful football, of when, exactly as Dan said, it was easy. I turned to my family at the end of the first 45 and I said, I don't think that could have gone any better. Of course, we could have got more goals, but the fact that we dominated possession, we dominated the chances, and Villa looked toothless. They had nothing, and suddenly we were playing that lovely passing style. The combinations were flowing, and it looked destined for us to be in the Premier League. And then the second half, of course, with our valiant, I mean, Villa came out flying out of the gates.
Absolutely.
And just as we were about to kind of, exactly, just as we were trying to, we kind of had more chances. I mean, Johansson blazed that massive chance over. And then Odoi got sent off. And then that last 20 minutes was just pure grit, as you guys said. And I think that's a great almost metaphor for our season as a whole. Because there were times when we played that lovely free-flowing football. I'm thinking of Sheffield United, in particular at home. That was, I think, the encapsulation of our football. But I think in a lot of times that maybe didn't get as much attention, we ground out victories. We played with the grit and desire needed. And that was exactly how we played at Wembley. We had the beautiful football and we had the grit and desire. And that's really how this entire season went, I think.
That's a great way to put it. That second half was grinding it out. And they found a way to get that part of them during the season, because that was my whole thing. Could they find ways to grind out a game? You have both parts of their game. You have the beautiful free-flowing football the first half, the second grinding it out and finding a way to win. And that's exactly what they did. And I just thought to myself, those final 25 minutes, if they can grind it out, they deserve this so much, because it really epitomizes how far they have come to be able to do that down a man. That, to me, they completely deserved it. And I just wanted to say that real quick, and then we'll really get into this. I'll just share my thoughts on this. I flew out Friday night from Boston, and it was just a whirlwind. I barely had any sleep. I was all excited, and I probably only had about an hour of sleep. Next thing I know, co-host Emilio Danello picks me up at the airport, go back to his place, rest for just a little bit, and before I know it, I'm on my way to Wembley. And I'm going to tell you guys all this, because this is how I feel about this. I've been to all kinds of sporting events my entire life. I was to the AFC Championship game last year for the New England Patriots. I've never experienced an atmosphere like at Wembley in my entire life. I've never seen it. I've never felt it. The bigger part of this, and Dan, I want to go to you, how I felt and the emotion walking into Wembley with all of those Fulham supporters. I did not hear the Aston Villa supporters. I'm sure they were loud on their end, but the atmosphere, Dan, I want to get your thoughts on it, because I've never experienced that before.
Look, I think Fulham have a reputation of being quite a sedate crowd, you know, quite a reasonable and friendly set of supporters. And in the build up to the game, there's quite a lot about, you know, Villa will bring the noise. Villa are a massive club. You know, they'll make lots of noise, and they did sing. And you could hear them on the highlights, like you, Russ. I couldn't really hear them aside from the beginning and after the and immediately in the second half. But Fulham made a lot of noise.
Absolutely.
And you could tell from the players that was really helping them at times when they were struggling in the game, especially that last 20 minutes, because it seemed like every time we kicked it out for a throw or something, the Fulham fans were celebrating like we'd scored another goal, which was extraordinary. But I also think more than that, the visual effect of the white, the sea of white, the white wall behind that goal was incredible.
It was.
I've seen a couple of shots of it from the Aston Villa end, and it looks amazing.
Totally agree, Dan. And I just wanted to bring up the atmosphere because I think it definitely played a role. The fans certainly played a role, and I got chills hanging out with the Fulham supporters. And before I go on any further, I just want to thank all the Fulham supporters that were nice enough just to say hello to me. It means the world to me. Everyone was so nice to me. I watched the match with co-host Emilio Danello, Steve Lydiard, and also Reese Curtis, along with Callie Carlin came as well. Joe Tyvee was there, and we just had the best time. It was nervy, but it was just wonderful to be among all of these Fulham supporters. I came all this way, and the minute I walked in, it just hit me like a ton of bricks, and I actually tweeted out, oh, crap, I'm actually here for this. And I meant that in a positive way because I've never experienced anything like that, and I just want to thank everyone that was part of the White Wall, everyone that I met, and just thank you, because it was such a wonderful experience, and you played a role in Fulham gaining promotion. I truly believe that. All right, Giannis, I'm going to start with you. Just I want to get your thoughts. Let's do this real quick. Thoughts on the starting 11 and the 18 overall, just real quick here.
No complaints. I said to you in the pre-match that they really needed, Slava needed to play Bubu. He did that. He resisted the temptation to bring my friend in, Floyd Ayite. Naiskin's Cabana was the unlucky one not to make a feature on the bench, but you could see after the game he was as happy as anybody else. It was the right 18 for the right occasion, and I felt there was only going to be one goal in it. I just thought we had just too much panache and
Giannis, you got it right, didn't you?
Yeah. I just thought that we matched up really, really well. Although, I think. I think in one crucial area, I thought it was going to be very even. One crucial area, I thought the big one was actually the coaching, because Steve Bruce's their tactics from the first minute were all wrong. You could see that they were sitting back, and it was like they were playing not to lose. And then second half, when he figured out they had a problem, they started attacking. But no complaints about the lineup. It was exactly what I expected.
Okay, quickly, Dan, your thoughts on the 18 and, of course, the starting 11.
Yeah, I was really pleased with the starting 11. I wondered if we might go a bit safety first and not play Kamara from the beginning, but I was really pleased to see him in there because, you know, he is as unpredictable as anything. I don't think he knows what he's going to do.
That's a good point.
Next, so how a defender can prepare to play against him is unimaginable, really. And also, we got not just the personnel, but we got the strategy absolutely right. We came out on the front foot, and I think that was down to the confidence that the coaching staff have imbued into the team about the way that we play. So, yeah, Slavisa had it spot on. And I think all of his substitutions in terms of how to manage the game were excellent as well, because what we've added from last season is an ability to be more professional and to be tougher to play through at the critical times. And that really came in very handy in that last 20 minutes.
Absolutely, Dan. That's a great point. Managing the game. Slavisa did an excellent job doing that and make sure that we had the right players out there to end that match. That's a great point there, my friend. All right. Max, over to you. Your thoughts on the starting 11 and the 18 overall. Do you agree with the guys?
Yeah, the main thing for me, I think the only real question of debate was who's going to start in that right wing position. And as we've all said, you know, Kamara was clearly the right option. He was superb. And I think there was the one moment when he went on that brilliant run and, you know, just totally faked that John Terry before he unfortunately slipped. It could have been a penalty. But that kind of summed his entire day up for me, because he had that tireless running ethic the entire match. And then he went down for 10, although he got substituted off a little while after. He was a great outlet. He was always a willing runner just to waste some time in the corner. And he really did himself proud, I think. And just to think that that was only his second start in a row, and he hadn't started since the Borough match back in January. That's what made that even the more impressive for me.
Okay, excellent. All right. Guys, let's get into this. Can do things a little bit differently. I just want to get your overall view of the first half. And then after that, we're going to go through a couple of key moments. There is a couple of controversial moments in this match that I want to spend a little bit of time on. Of course, we have to talk about the great goal by Tom Kearney. But Mr. Janaeus, I'm going to start with you. Just give me your overall view of how Fulham played in the first half. I thought they were excellent. Dan's already said that. I believe Max has as well, and I agree with that. Your thoughts?
Yeah, they were excellent. I mean, our shape was very good defensively. We looked solid. Very good link-up play with the midfield. Very good link-up play with the strikers. I mean, it really was only one team in it in the first half. I thought Villa, really, apart from Grealish, in that first half were poor. Poor. It almost looked like somebody put Percocet in their tea before the game.
Do you think they were nervous, Giannis? Do you think they played nervous?
I think they were flat. They just looked flat. They just didn't. There wasn't a lot of movement. They really didn't press high at all. It's almost as if they were waiting for things to happen. And I think, you know, maybe the Villa fans players were foxed by the wall of white. It can be intimidating going to a stadium and seeing that. And it really, you know, they looked spooked and they looked slow. And the first half was really men against the boys. If anything, we should have been two or three up by the half.
Okay, excellent there. Dan, over to you. It's funny because when I look at this going into it, Giannis and I were talking about how Aston Villa had all this experience, and I thought Fulham needed at least 20 minutes to really get their way into the match and then relax and then take it from there. And maybe this is just me watching the match being there. It just felt like Aston Villa were not in any gear. They were just flat, as Giannis said. But I think maybe they were a little bit intimidated. I want to get your thoughts on the first half, but also how Villa came out in this match.
Well, I think, as we've said, as we've all said, you know, Fulham started on the front foot and actually taking the game to Aston Villa probably knocked them off their stride a little bit. And I thought that was essential because we had to start well. If we'd have conceded the first goal, then Villa would have had something to hold on to, and they're a very good side at defensively and at shoring up a lead. So we didn't need that to happen. I actually felt maybe they were intimidated, perhaps they were nervous, right. But I felt that Bruce was quite negative and cautious in the way that he sent his team out, because you could see the very stark difference between how they got the ball wide and got their wingers involved in the second half when they had
to come out
and play. And actually, that pushed the likes of Fredericks and especially Target, who had a lot of space in the first 20 minutes or so to go deep into Aston Villa territory. That pushed them back in the second half. So, you know, I think we started at a tempo. We had an awful lot of the ball in the first 20, 25 minutes. And I think that just settled everybody down. And, you know, people realised there wasn't much to fear here and we just had to take our chance. And unfortunately, we did that.
Absolutely there, Dan. All right, Max, over to you. Your thoughts on the first half.
Yeah, I'm really glad you guys brought up kind of like the pre-match talk of how, you know, Villa were the more experienced side. We never had a player who played at Wembley. And then ironically, they're the ones who started with little or no ambition. And I think it was really crucial that we had so much of the ball in that opening period. I glanced over at the big screen at one point, I think half an hour into the match, and it was like 70 to 30% possession for Fulham, which was remarkable. And that really showed... Yeah, and Villa were so flat. I was almost so surprised that they offered so little in attack, considering, you know, how high-powered their attack is with players like Grabin, Grealish, Snodgrass, you know, all undoubtedly Premier League quality players. It didn't seem like they played with any ambition and not really playing to Fulham's hands, as you guys mentioned. And, of course, the goal, I think, came at the perfect time because sometimes when we're on top early on in the first half, which we've seen at times this season, we struggle to get that goal, and it might come later. But this match, we really got that early goal. And I think that set the tone for the rest of the match, and that was really crucial.
Okay, excellent, Max. All right, I'm going to go right back to you, and I'm going to give you the honors to talk about the goal by Tom Kearney. Before that, we have to talk about that there was an opportunity from Abubakar Kamara in the 21st minute. Now that leads to the goal just a couple minutes later from Tom Kearney, but set up beautifully from Ryan Sessegnon. And talk about the goal. Describe it to us, please.
It was a goal of absolute beauty, and as we were discussing before the show, I think we've all watched it probably hundreds of times by now. It's a beautiful goal. So I think it all starts out with a really intelligent ball from Stefan Johansson. He takes it on first time, basically just inside the Villa half, smashes it right to the feet of Sessegnon, and it takes out around four or five Villa players with just one pass, which is crucial to getting that impetus to starting the attack. We like to probe, and then that was an incisive pass, and that really started it off. And Sessegnon's first touch, it was poor. I think Johansson might have overhit it, and Sessegnon wasn't ready. And it took it just to the point where Conor Hourihan, the Villa midfielder, could have a chance to slide in and take the ball. But when you see this, I've watched this again, I don't really understand how Hourihan missed the challenge. But I think it has to go down to the deft touch of Sessegnon, who just eluded him, left Hourihan on the floor, and all he had to do then, he still had a lot to do. And he picked out the perfect through ball right in between Terry and Hudden, those two very old players, probably a combined age of over 70 years old. He played it right in between them. And that's just, that's for me, is all, what Sessegnon is all about. Because he might not have had the most influential game, but when it the matter, when he drifts into those central positions, he has that knack of finding the right pass, the right finish. And that's what makes him such a valuable player. And the pass was so good. Kearney didn't even have to take a touch, didn't even have to break stride. And what a confident, cool finish right past Sam Johnston. And after that goal, that was probably the loudest I've ever heard a stadium ever. Yeah, loudest I've ever yelled. It exploded, and it was one of the moments I'll never forget in my life.
I'm right there with you. Besides the final whistle, which we'll be talking about in a little bit, I'll tell you what happened with me in the final whistle, which was amazing. But let's move on. And right after that, you have an opportunity from Abubakar Kamara once again. And Dan, I'm going to go to you. Let's start talking about a controversial moment that happened a little bit later. It involves Ryan Fredericks and Jack Grealish. Now, I didn't see this live. I didn't notice it live, unfortunately. I didn't. It was, you know, a little far back. I didn't notice it, but I started getting messages from people on social media about this at halftime, telling me that he should have been sent off. And what I did this morning, I watched it a bunch of times. I actually asked Steve Lydiard, who is a ref, who's a co-host, and I wanted to ask his thoughts on this. And, you know, this is what I messaged Steve, and Steve said it was fine to definitely talk about what he shared. I just said, Steve, have you seen the controversial stamp by Fredericks on Grealish yet? He said, yes, and it's not clear cut. Notice, Fredericks never takes his eyes off the ball. That's what the fourth official will have noticed. I said, how is this deliberate? That was my question to him. He says, even if it is, you can't be sure. 99% isn't enough. Grealish, he's talking about Grealish's situation later on, which we'll talk about as a red. Then Odoi isn't off. That's who he fouls. But to Steve Lydiard's point, who is a ref, he brought up the whole point, and I watched this, Dan. If you watch Ryan Fredericks, he's looking at the ball. He's not looking at Grealish. And of course, the fourth official's right there, along with Bruce and along with Jokanović. I don't see this as deliberate. Why would he do it in front of all these people? But I want to get your thoughts on it. Am I wrong?
Yeah, I think you are. I think it's I like Ryan Fredericks. He's a terrific player. And it looks a lot worse on the slow motion than it does in normal speed, I think. But you can't make contact with a player like that. I understand what people are saying, that, you know, he was going for the ball. He wasn't looking at Grealish. He's trodden on him accidentally. But you've seen so many people sent off for that. Because it's an act of aggression, uncontrolled aggression, and it's dangerous play, violent conduct. You know, he was very lucky to stay on the field because another referee in another situation might well have sent him off. Another referee might have been closer to it because I'm not sure you could ascertain exactly where his foot had gone at first glance. But I think, had this happened, say, to Fredericks, we'd have been calling for a red card. I winced when I saw it. And nothing changes my view. And I did referee football games quite a long, 10 years ago now for quite a long period of time. You know, I'd have sent him off for that, no question.
Okay. And again, I'm just also going to add this, that Steve says, agree, he could have easily gone. And again, it's a decision. But I never, until I watched it back and I saw that he was looking at the ball. But I hear what you're saying. It's open for discussion. That's why I wanted to bring this up. Max, what are your thoughts on all this?
It's a tough one. I agree with you guys. In the moment, I had no idea. I didn't see it. I just thought Grealish was play acting. So I think in that sense, maybe his reputation preceded him there. But yeah, like just like Dan, I watch it back in the replay, and it does not look good. Of course, no. It is a slow-mo, so that's not awesome. He stamps right on Grealish's knee, and it looks bad. But, I mean, the argument can be made, like you said and like Steve said, Russ. He's looking at the ball. You know, it wasn't like it was completely away from the ball. He's trying to walk. Grealish did kind of fall down right in front of him. It doesn't look good. Of course, you know, we're very lucky it wasn't a red. But my whole opinion has to be changed by what Grealish did to Kearney in the second half. And the fact of the matter is that was disgusting as well. So I have very little sympathy for him there.
Okay. And again, you know, just talking back and forth with Steve on instant message, you know, and again, he's saying that he's open to either scenario, that to be called or not to be called. But he just says the only person that knows the truth behind this is Ryan Fredericks. And that's what makes this difficult to make a clear cut answer on. But I thought I would at least bring it up. And I understand, Dan, I totally understand where you're coming from. And I also understand others that, like Steve, that were bringing up other elements to it. But it's a good point, because if this was in reverse, we'd be pretty upset too. So very good by you to bring that up there, Dan. It's a good point. Giannis, your thoughts on this?
Hello. To be honest, I mean, who cares? I mean, we won. I mean, let's call it the way it is. But also, I have to tell you, when I did see it in real time, I thought, oh no, yeah. It was a red. Yeah, I mean, it was a red every day of the week. Okay. But fortune favors the brave, and we've said about, you know, decisions, you know, they even themselves out. And good God, are we overdue a little bit of luck or what? I mean, we aren't we for years and years? Yeah. And so I know the Villa fans. Sorry, not Villa. I meant Aston Vanilla fans. pretty upset right now because, you know, they're playing Birmingham City next year, and let's not forget Rotherham. But to be fair, they really can't have any complaints over the whole game because the tactics in the first half were negative. They were better second half, but really we were still the better side in the day. So okay. I wish them all the best next year when they're playing Millwall and the Ha-Ha's.
Okay, very good. And listen, I appreciate the commentary of Max and Dan Crawford on this. And everyone has an opinion. It's interesting because I was thinking just like Dan had said until I actually saw and Steve had pointed that out. But there are two ways to look at it. That's why it could have gone either way. And as Yana said, he sees it as a red. I can see that. And that's why it's interesting to talk about. But in the end, like Yana said, you know, we deserve a little bit of luck, I guess. You know, so yeah. So let's move on from that. And one other key moment in the first half was the header from Ryan Sessegnon in the 43rd minute. Now let's transition. Let's talk about the second half. And guys, we've already talked about this already, that the play by Aston Villa changed. And Dan, you did a very good job, I believe, of describing that. But let's go back to you and just talk about the early stages and the pressure that Aston Villa was putting on Fulham.
Yeah, I mean, they obviously would have sat down at half-time and realised that things weren't going very well. So they were going to be a bit more adventurous and a bit more aggressive. And the problem was, Adoma became so much more influential, and there's at least two games at Villa Park that I can remember that he's caused real problems for Fulham, and he was hitting those crosses in that were starting to really take effect. The same sort of crosses, Russ, that were causing us real problems at Birmingham on the last day of the season, into that sort of around the near post channel and a bit deeper. And also, you know, a similar sort of ball to the one that Derby scored from in the playoff semi-final first leg. But, you know, I looked back at it. And for all their probing, and they certainly did have, you know, a number of times they overhit a cross from the left
or, you know, across, sort of flashed across the 6-yard line. There was one where Bettinelli came for it and Grealish headed it over, and I really thought that was going to be the moment because, yes, you know, it looked like it was going to be that. I felt like that was going to be the equaliser. But for all their pressure, Russ, Bettinelli in that period didn't have to make a save. It was only, you know, the only real save he had to make was from Grealish much later on, yes, in the half. So, you know, we were under pressure, but we also, we defended it very well. You know, I only have to look at Tim Ream to sort of calm me down in these situations because he's so cool, you know. And they all have an idea of what they're trying to do. You've got Ream. You had Odoi, who obviously he got sent off. Unfortunately, one thing we didn't mention, I didn't think that first booking was a booking. I wasn't even sure it was a foul.
Yeah. Wasn't a booking. I agree. You know, there, yeah.
I mean, I don't know. It looked to me like he got the ball in the tackle. So, you know, and also McDonald was immense. So I felt like we did very well to contain a livelier Villa in that second half.
Okay, excellent there. Max, your thoughts on what Dan just shared about the early stages. Do you agree with him?
Yeah, I mean, I think the crosses is a really good tactical point to bring up because that's always kind of given us problems. And we do have, I mean, our fullbacks, one criticism you could say is they don't necessarily close down those areas quickly enough. And that was poor against Birmingham and poor against Derby, you know, in the first leg of the playoff semifinal. So that was an issue. But again, I think the crucial point that Dan brought up as well is that, you know, how many saves did Bettinelli have to make? And the fact of the matter is, for all the possession and kind of chances, not really, all possession and attacking, you know, possession as well they had, there weren't many clear-cut chances that you could have said, wow, we got lucky there. With the exception of, you know, the Grealish one-on-one, the block at the end by Norwood, and that, you know, when Grealish headed over from the cross, it wasn't like they were definitely raining down our goal. They had pressure for sure. But I think another good aspect of our defensive formation is that we can, at times only when we are under the cosh, we can let them have that possession, but we really limit them to very few good scoring opportunities, which I think is key.
Okay, excellent there. And I'm glad you guys talked about the opportunity from Jack Grealish in the 60th minute. Marcus Bettinelli makes the save. It was a great run for him, but I believe, Dan, was it Kevin McDonald get a block on that?
Oh, mate, there's two things about that. The first thing is, what a tackle from Kevin McDonald. Because Greenish makes a... It would have, I think I wrote in the report, it would have been one of the great Wembley goals.
Yeah.
You know, the way he sort of slalomed around, I think it was four players in the end. And he beats McDonald once, but McDonald has the presence of mind to sort of recognise where he's going and dive in, because he knows the shot's going to come soon because Grealish is running out of room. And that actually makes it a better reaction save, I think, from Bettinelli, because it sort of hits McDonald, gets a deflection, and Betts makes a really good save. And I have to say, just while we're on Marcus, what a moment that was when, after the final whistle, he picked up the flare, which obviously we can't condone on this podcast. It's all, you know, it's very unsafe. But it was the moment of the day for me when he, somebody who, you know, came to the club at 14, you know, was very close to being released at 18, and is a genuine Fulham fan, who's been through the struggles of relegation and not being in the team, very recently not being in the team, you know, and carried the flare, ran to celebrate with the Fulham fans. It's a terrific photograph, and you know what, he's been magnificent since he came back into the side. And that save, as well as that one, I think it was against Leeds earlier in the season, Russ, yep, where he made a save from a one-on-one, and we went up the other end and scored.
Yes,
straight away.
That's a great, you know, point. Yeah,
he has been absolutely pivotal, and I'm so pleased for the guy because he lives and breathes Fulham.
Way to put it.
And you know, that was as critical a save as you'll ever make on the big occasion. And you could just sense people growing in confidence because that felt like a big moment.
That's a great way to look at it, Dan, because again, we're talking about the different styles of foam from the first half to the second half, and you have this play, and you really did a nice job talking about, with all the huffing and puffing from Aston Villa, you know, we're talking about their dominant play. How dangerous was it? Well, this was the opportunity, and Marcus Bettinelli comes up big along with Kevin McDonald. They really did their job, because that would have been a great goal, like you mentioned, but the goal was not to be done because Fulham did their job, and that's what's great about it. And like you said, the confidence comes after that, especially with things that happen afterwards, and we're going to talk about some of them right now. Max, I'll go to you in the 63rd minute. Again, this is another controversial situation that involves Jack Grealish. This time, it's his tackle on Tom Kearney. I think it's a red. I believe our co-host Steve Woodyard said it's a red. Your thoughts? Should this have been a red and not a yellow?
There's no doubt about it, Russ. That is a disgusting tackle. It should have been a straight red. And this is why I think Grealish is going to find it difficult to succeed at the big stage, because he just has that attitude to be so petulant, so disgraceful. And the fact of the matter is, he goes into that challenge knowing he's aiming to hurt Tom Kearney. There's zero attempt to play the ball. All he's looking at there is Tom Kearney's ankle, and he tries to snap it. He goes studs up so late. And I mean, it makes me so angry, because I think, what if he actually, you know, made a little bit better contact and actually seriously hurt Tom Kearney? And that would have been just an absolute travesty. And I just hate when players go in like that. There's no need for it. And the only way to get that out of the game is to really punish that with a straight red, which is exactly what it deserves. The only good thing that came out of that incident, I think, is you see how closely knit this Fulham team is. Such a band of brothers, you know, as I wrote in my match report, is that almost the entire team came running over. Mitrovic comes steaming over from probably 30 yards up the pitch to go and shove Grealish. And, you know, I love that, to see that from fellow teammates standing up for a player who's just been attempted to be injured, and just say, listen, you can't do that to one of our mates. That's not going to fly.
Okay, very good. Dan, your view on this?
Oh, Max has summed it up. It was a pitiful, horrible tackle. And I think it was motivated out of spite, because I sincerely think that Grealish thought he was clattered by Kamara just like a moment, couple of seconds earlier.
That's right. That's a good point.
But if anything, you know, that was a sort of coming together of two players. And it showed actually that, you know, he was becoming frustrated. Max talked about him being petulant. You know, the great players raise their game and don't get rattled when the sort of pressure is on. Grealish, obviously, he has a lot to learn, but also, you know, I did feel for him in some sense, because, you know, Villa had all these experienced players, as yourself and Max have spoken about already in the show, and yet for a lot of the time, Grealish was the only one who was posing a real threat to Fulham. I thought they were anonymous in the forward line, regardless of which strikers they put on the pitch. And it all came back to Grealish. He was their hope. And you could just see him getting more and more frustrated that it wasn't going his way. But it was a disgraceful challenge.
Yes.
And it deserved to be punished by a red card. But the referee, the thing about the referee there, he saw it. He clearly saw it. His positioning was fine. The thing I noticed, he got his yellow card out very quickly.
Yes,
it was almost as if he was he'd made a conscious decision to not send somebody off unless he had to. You know, because it was a final and he wanted to keep the players on the field. That was what I took from that. But like Max said, you know, everyone enveloped the referee and Grealish, and it showed how much belief and bond, such a strong bond there is between these players. And unfortunately, rather than Villa being reduced to 10 men, you know, we were. And that made it, you know, I felt like the final half an hour or so was going to be quite nerve-wracking. And little did I know.
Oh, boy. Boy, did it up it when we get to that in just a few minutes. Dan, I'm going to go right back to you, because this happened right in front of me. It happens in the 68th minute, a shot by Stefan Johansson. I right in front of me, I'm thinking, here it is. Here's the second goal, but it goes wide. Love Steph Joe. Could he have done a little bit better here, or was there just too much pressure on him where he was?
Well, I think there's two things. Well, if it was on his left foot, I think it would have been 2-0 because his left foot's his stronger foot. Sessegnon and Mitrovic do brilliantly to make this opportunity, Russ, because Ryan releases the pass at exactly the right time. Unfortunately for Steph, he's got two... How old did you call these defenders, Max? Ancient defenders that had about 70 years between them or something like that? That's brilliant. Exactly. I love that. But they both sort of converged on Stefan at the same time. So he had to hit it. And unfortunately, at the point that he struck it, he was leaning back. So it was always going to go up. And I had the same feeling as you. I just thought, oh, no, I really hope we don't miss that chance.
Yeah.
But it was just in a period where we had a couple of good opportunities.
Right.
I think there was a header from Mitrovic from Target's cross
yep.
where he sort of guided it wide and he'll feel like he could have done better. And McDonald headed wide from a corner when he was being manhandled. And, you know, I had this horrible feeling that, you know, we hadn't taken our chances and at 1-0, you're still vulnerable to a defensive lapse or a moment of brilliance. And it kept us on tender hooks, didn't it?
It did, Dan. And I thought that was our moment, but it was not to be. And I started thinking, oh, when is their moment going to happen? And of course, then we're going to talk about the end of the match. But Max, I want to go to you. I got a decent view of this, and there are different opinions on this. It involves Abubakar Kamara just 1 minute later. And he goes down the box. It looks like to me it was right in front of me that he slips. Others think it's a penalty. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's probably a slip. I think that's probably the fairest thing. I don't think it's a dive. I don't think it's a foul. I think it's just a slip, simple as. But I think that whole situation was really just created by his amazing pace. And he just picks up the ball in inside his own half and just completely steams past the Villa midfield. And when he's one-on-one with John Terry, I wrote about this actually into the preview of the match. You know, that's going to be the situations where he's going to thrive when he's one-on-one with these old, aging, not very pacey defenders. He's going to have a field day, and he almost cut back in and applied that perfect finish, which I think would have been the cherry on top, which really kind of sums up that little period we had where we really were dominating, as you guys mentioned, just before sending off.
Now, want to get your thoughts on the follow-up by Jednak. You saw it happens right after. What about that situation?
Yeah, that was really odd because the ball really had gone. And I do think the issue was Kamara probably...
It was Jednak, correct?
Yeah. Was it Terry? I'm not sure. I think it might have been the defender. What do you think, Dan?
I thought it was Jednak.
Yeah, okay.
I don't think it was he who shall not be named.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, sorry. I got that one wrong. But yeah, I think... He was already down on the ground. The ball had already gone. Then Kamara kind of flew himself to the ground again. I think that's probably where his reputation probably got ahead of him because he had that dive in the Derby match. And I don't think the referee was going to get a penalty for that.
Okay. Very good there.
Right, Rush, but that was clearly a foul. I know. I accept that the referee wasn't going to give a penalty because he sort of – it's almost like he had that sort of no penalty gesture. He prepared it in the mirror in the morning before the game because he did it so many times. But that if that is not a penalty, because of course in the rules of the game it doesn't matter where the ball is. That's why you get penalties for people like elbowing somebody in the penalty area,
right?
Or for people holding somebody down at a corner when the ball's gone to the other side of the penalty area. I mean. Clearly, I think he does slip for the first one. The second one is an outrageous tackle.
Well, that's why I'm bringing that up, Dan.
Sorry.
No, not a problem. You know, and again, because everyone's focused on the first action, I don't think enough has been talked about the second action. That's why I wanted to bring that up. Okay, but so you think the second part, well, obviously is a foul.
Yeah, and what when there's a foul in the penalty area, it follows that that's a penalty.
Okay, very good there, my friend. All right, I'm going to give you the honors to talk about the situation with Grealish and Dennis Odoi. And I like Dennis Odoi a great deal. I think that he needs to be more cautious in this situation. That's just my opinion. I want to get your opinion on that that situation, which led to the second yellow card and obviously his sending off.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, this is a sending off. I can't really see how else you view this. I think I said already, I wasn't sure about his first. In fact, well, I was sure about his first yellow card. It wasn't a yellow card for me. But this one, it's clumsy. It's dangerous. It's almost panicked. And Dennis has done a terrific job as a sort of converted centre-back, a makeshift centre-back.
Exactly.
But we had this sort of situation before once at Brentford where he made a needless tackle and got punished for it. And I don't know if either of you have seen this interview with Kevin McDonald on the Fulham website where he... Oh, I won't do a Scottish accent because it's terrible.
Give it a go. I
want to
hear
this. No, it's more Yanis' domain, I think. But he says something like, oh, I'm absolutely going to hammer Dennis when I get inside. I'm going to hammer him. Because your natural centre-back would realise that Grealish has probably miscontrolled the ball or put it a little bit too far ahead of both himself and the opposition player. So actually, he doesn't need to dive in like that. But unfortunately, yeah, it probably is another yellow card. And it put us under tremendous strain for the rest of the game.
It totally did, Dan. And we're going to be talking about the later stages of this match, the last 25 minutes, which were crazy. And when that happened, I'm not going to lie to you, I thought, okay, if they can see this out, they completely deserve it, like I said before. But I was extremely nervous. I said, this is going to be their opportunity. Talking about Aston Villa, and whenever they had a free kick, I would turn to Emilio and said, oh, no, here it is. But it never came to fruition, thankfully. But before I get your thoughts on the later stages, both of you, I just want to mention, because, Dan, you already talked about this, I think it's key to talk about the substitutions by Fulham. You have Oliver Norwood coming on for Stefan Johansson in the 72nd minute. You have Tomas Kalas coming on for Abubakar Kamara in the 77th minute. And then later on in the 83rd minute, you have Cyrus Christie coming on for Ryan Fredericks. Those were your substitutes, and they played a role in Fulham seeing this match out. And Dan, I'll get your thoughts, and then Max, I'll get your thoughts. Let's talk about these last 25 minutes, and don't share your thoughts when the final whistle. We'll leave that for the very end. I just want to get your thoughts on Fulham handling this later stages of this match to see it out.
Yeah, look, just on the substitutes, there are two moments that encapsulate it for me. Ollie Norwood has been fantastic, I think, as a squad player for this team throughout the season. He deputised very ably for various midfielders who were injured in the early part of the season. He hasn't seen as much of the action as perhaps he would have liked later on, although he did score that penalty against Middlesbrough, which we can't forget, you know. We should never forget that. But his moment of the season has to be that unbelievable tackle on Conor Hourihan.
That was great.
Moments after coming on, I'm sure of it. And it just, oh, it was brilliant. And I have to say, I didn't, you know, before he came to Fulham, I didn't really think he was that, he had that in his locker. But what a tackle that was. And Tomas Kalas comes off the bench equally. You know, probably his second season hasn't been as good as his first season with Fulham. I think he would probably admit that. And again, he hasn't been on the pitch as much as he would have liked in the second half of the season. But his header in the last minute or the first minute of added time, where it looks like Villa have got a ball over the back four for the first time in the game, I think. And Kalas jumps, and he jumps a very long way in the air, but the ball looks like it's behind him, and he hangs in the air, and somehow he gets his head to it. Not only does he get his head to it, but he heads it further up in the air, thereby reducing the chance of Villa making something from the rebound. And wow, that was incredible.
Yes.
And of course, we defended very diligently. Yes, we're under a lot of pressure, but we stayed narrow. We made Villa go out wide. We got bodies back into the penalty area. We blocked a lot of things, and we were disciplined. We knew exactly what we had to do. And goodness me, we You know, I can't think of many clear-cut chances that Villa had in that period. Maybe there was one header from Hogan, who always seems to score against us. But we did a brilliant job with 10 men of nullifying Villa, who'd thrown on an extra couple of forwards themselves.
They did. They did. And I thought their moment, Dan, was the free kick by Robert Snodgrass that went wide. But besides that, like you said, the header from Hogan, there really wasn't much. They also, again, I've seen a lot of this from Aston Villa supporters, the call for handball on Dennis Adore. I've seen that a few times. And I believe there was also one that they were claiming for Tim Ream. I don't see that in either one of those, Dan. I think you would agree with me. And then, of course, the very end with Jack Grealish. I watched this with Matt Target. And, again, that's not a penalty.
No. Look, seriously, I'd be screaming about it still now if any of those penalties had been given.
I know.
That's just what happens when you're desperate and you're screaming for anything. Hell, we've been in that position a few times. exactly. So I don't necessarily blame the Villa fans, but No, we defended really well.
Right. We did. And that's the bottom line. This was gut check time, and Fulham came through it with flying colors, because that was as difficult as you could put them under. Down a man for that period of time with everything on the line, and they saw it out. And that's what's amazing. Max, your thoughts about the ending stages, and then we'll talk about the final whistle.
There was this weird thing that I kept doing during that final 25 minutes, you know, after Adore got sent off. And it's something it's hard to not do as a football fan. Because you just kind of imagine, I just kept imagining a goal going in our net and the Villa fan just erupting in joy. And it was like, you don't want to imagine it, but it's what you're thinking. It's your worst case scenario. And it kept running through my head. And it almost seemed inevitable at times. Because that's, I think, the worst feeling as a fan. Seeing you guys concede a goal and seeing the other team's support just erupt. And I just thought it would happen. You know, I had the worst feeling. It felt like an age. It felt like a whole lifetime waiting just for that, you know, final period to end. But, you know, as the minutes ticked on, as, you know, chance after chance they had, and really went begging, and I realized, you know, this is going to be our day. And there was this really special moment just before the final whistle. I think it was probably the 93rd or 92nd minute when we cleared a pass, and, you know, the entire just east side, and we all stood up and started just cheering. And it almost brought tears to my eyes before I realized, okay, there's still 2 minutes left to go. But it was just a beautiful moment when we all kind of, and that's when I knew, you know, we're not going to concede today. It's going to be a special moment. And just that heroic defensive rear guard action, it was almost, you know, as brilliant as if we'd won 4-0. It was so special.
It was, Max, and that's why it goes back to what you said earlier, a tale of two halves for Fulham, playing it two different ways. But I thought, again, it's bringing everything to fruition to the very end to see the completion of Fulham Football Club. From, I want to say, when Jokanović started the season last season, and we weren't really finding ways to win like we are this season. I look at how Brighton would just find a way to win at the end of these matches, and you're thinking, how did they do it? Fulham were able to do that this season, and it again, at the very end, that's what you saw. You saw both sides of their game, not just going forward, playing the attractive football. You saw the gritty part of their game, and in the end, that saw it out. That was, you know, again, that got them the promotion. That gritty was the last part that you saw. So they put their game complete. They made it complete at the very end, and now we have promotion to the Premier League. But we have to end by talking about our emotions at the very end. Dan, I'm going to start with you. Final whistle. What was going through your mind, and how did you react?
I think I just went crazy. You know, the last 5 minutes were just so nerve-wracking. I was convinced that the referee was going to play more than that 5 minutes. I was absolutely convinced.
Yeah,
I was there with you. I agree with you. Yeah. I keep going.
I was like, goodness, that's 5 minutes, but we're only halfway through. you know, so I blew the whistle and I was surprised. Yeah. I had a very good friend of mine from the Back to the Cottage campaign called Peter Hyams, who by chance happened to sit next to me. We hadn't booked the tickets together or anything. It just happened. And he was overcome with emotion I had Lydia Campbell, who's been on this podcast a few times, I think, Russ. She was a few rows in front of me, and she came up and gave us all a hug in tears. And then, you know, all of it, I looked up and there was Cyrus Christie charging towards us. And suddenly everyone else was charging towards us. And, you know, there was just this moment of complete exhilaration because we'd done it.
Yes.
You know, and it seemed so far off. There are so many times this season where you thought, goodness me, we're struggling to compete at the top level. We've lost our fluency from last season. You know, Burton away in particular, Sunderland and Brentford are the games that people talk about. And I was just overcome with emotion because it was a special day to do it there and in the manner that we did it. And also for a lot of the supporters, a lot of long-standing supporters who've been going to Fulham for a lot longer than I have. And, you know, I think some of us probably felt that 13 years in the Premier League was as good as it got. And the fact that Slavisa Jokanović now has the opportunity with some of these players, you know, we've got four or five or six players who genuinely can play in the Premier League, as in they're very much good enough to grace that level. And I'm excited that we'll get to see how Slavisa molds a team for the Premier League, and we'll see some of these exciting talents develop. But yeah, it was a crazy reaction after the final whistle, and the celebrations weren't bad either.
Celebrations were great. Max, over to you.
Yeah, as soon as that final whistle blew, it was just utter relief. And there are moments you just kind of like lose all sense of any type of inhibitions. There's nothing holding you back, and you just let out like the most primal joy, excitement, exhilaration. And I think that's why we all been drawn to sport, been drawn to Fulham in particular, because moments like that after the final whistle, that's what makes you suffer through, as Dan mentioned, this Burton away loss, the Sunderland away loss, the Brentford away loss. I mean, and it just felt so good for me because, I mean, the Felix Magath era. Remember how bad it got when they lost the first 7 matches of the season in 2014, and the pain of relegation just in the spring before that, and all the terrible times when I thought we had really lost this beautiful club and it was really going to be a while before we ever made it back to the Premier League, when we were really battling relegation to League One for much of those first 2.5 years we were back in the Championship. And to have that all just extinguished, to know we were going to be back in the big time, to know we held on, we weren't going to, this is not one time we're going to let up a late goal, we're going to see through it. And knowing that group of players, I completely agree with Dan, they're going to have a chance to show it in the Premier League. It's special because I don't want to see this group of players split up, and that would have happened if we lost. And thankfully, we get to indulge in this special, you know, group of 20, 25 men who steered us to this historic achievement. We get to see this all again for at least another season, which is special.
Absolutely. I cannot wait. For me, again, this is the best way I can put it. And many people don't follow the New England Patriots, but this is the best way I can do it. In 2001, the New England Patriots won their first Super Bowl. And when Adam Vinatieri kicked the field goal and it went through, I stood there and I didn't believe it. I actually didn't believe that they actually won it. That was a similar situation here because it didn't set in. And it happens, and all of a sudden there's this massive group hug among all of us. And it still didn't hit me that they had done this. In fact, I think hours later, it still didn't register because it was so amazing that we have put that chapter behind us, this relegation chapter, and now we're moving forward back to the Premier League where I believe Fulham belong. And all the hard work, everything that they have done to get to this point, like I said, being able to play the attractive football under Jokanović, but now to put the other part of the game, the defensive part of the game, put it all together on display for us in the hardest way, with 10 men for the last 25 minutes, to see that, it was still a disbelief for me, but it was utter joy when we all hugged. And then I just went down to one knee and I just started bawling. And I'm not going to be afraid to tell you, I was crying. Okay. I was crying. It was tears of joy. because I got to see this. I got to be among everyone. I got to see Fulham go back to the Premier League. So if people think I'm a baby because I was crying, so be it. It was tears of joy. And I'll never forget that. I'll never forget this weekend as long as I live. It was amazing. And that was putting it all together at the very end. I was still in disbelief when we were hugging, disbelief when I went down to one knee and started crying. But, you know, because it just wasn't secret. It was just emotion. But I was still like, I can't believe that this has finally happened. It did. And now we have so much to look forward to, guys. And listen, I do have to wrap up this show. Mr. Crawford, thank you so much for doing the show. This was excellent. I'm glad that you could join us tonight.
Thank you so much, guys. It's a pleasure to spend time with you always. And enjoy your summer. And, you know, enjoy the Premier League because we're there.
Absolutely. Fantastic. Max, thank you so much again for doing this tonight, for all the shows you've done during the year. You've been fantastic, and I can't thank you enough. And if you haven't checked out Max on the Boot Room, please check it out. He is being prolific writing on the Boot Room. Check him out. But I was thinking about so many people. One of the people, obviously, I was thinking of Giannis. Giannis actually, unfortunately, had to drop off early, and thank you, Giannis, for doing the show. I think about people like him. I think about people like you, Max, of course, Dan. So many people deserve that moment, and you deserved it, Max.
Russ, thank you so much for those amazingly kind words. You're far too kind, but I just want to give you a massive thank you as well. I was just like one of the fans who you mentioned beforehand. I've been listening to College Talk for a very long time, and it's always been a dream of mine to actually be on this podcast. And this year for me has just been a dream come true as well, just to be on there with you, sharing my thoughts on the Fulham community. And it really came full circle after this match, because a bunch of supporters reached out to me. I'll give a quick shout out to Neil Stort, who's an American supporter, who tweeted at me after.
I saw that.
And what he said was, thank you so much to me. And of course, all the credit goes to you, Russ, for organizing this amazing podcast and keeping it going for so long. And he also said, Max, thank you for helping me get into Fulham. He's a new Fulham fan. He's an American.
That's amazing.
That means the world that we can help out supporters like that and just bring joy into people's lives, because that's what Fulham is for me. And I know it is for you and Dan.
Absolutely.
And that's why I think the power of a podcast like this is just boundless, because we can bring joy to people's lives while talking about the club we love.
Yeah.
And the club we love just happened to have the best day in a very long time this weekend. And I think we're rightfully enjoying that. And as Dan said, we're enjoying that for the whole summer.
Absolutely. And I just want to mention, so I just want to thank all the listeners. We're still going to have more shows. Don't think that we're stopping Cottage Talk for the summer. We're going to have plenty of shows. And I just want to mention, we are in the process of planning our year in the Premier League, and we are going big time. There are going to be some changes to Cottage Talk that I think are going to be extremely positive. We're going to be expanding Cottage Talk. I can't go into more detail about that, but you are going to get more of Cottage Talk next season. That's all I'm going to say right now, but I want to thank you all for listening. Definitely want to thank my co-hosts, Max Cohen, Daniel Crawford from HamEN.com, and of course, Giannis Janaeus. I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk.